Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Chuck and Winkler on the only station Bucks fans need. Sports Radio, 105.7 FM, The Fan.
98-97 last night, Bucks beat the Celtics at Fiserv Forum. Who was the Chili's MVP? 799-1250. Where do you find that out? The post-game show. We do one after every game. Sparky last night with the announcement. You at this time. Tell us what he said. Let's go out to Scott in Franklin. Scott, who was the Chili's MVP?
Giannis.
Was it Giannis?
Your Chili's MVP of the game in a Bucks 98-97 win against the Boston Celtics last night is Giannis. 30 points, 13 boards, 6 assists, a steal, and 2 block shots. Giannis, your Chili's MVP.
Scott, that's free food at Chili's. Congratulations to you. Bucks win 98-97. Eric Name with The Athletic. He was there. And you were trying to do some digging after the game, Namesy. Coach Names.
Namesy.
We still don't know, or at least I don't, what happened there in those final seconds. Can you explain what you know about the tip and the rim and the all that?
Sure. I don't know that it's all that clear, but essentially what I understand from doing the pool report last night with the officials and from listening to Mike Budenholzer after the game and talking to him about it is that the clock would start in that situation when Brook Lopez touches the basketball. So that's the first question, right, is whether it starts when it's tapped by Giannis or it's tapped by Brook Lopez. So the clock starts when Brook Lopez touches the basketball. So with that out of the way, they kept talking about possession, and it is my understanding that they did not believe Brook Lopez tipped the basketball, but instead caught and shot the basketball. And you cannot catch and shoot the basketball in 0.2 seconds. You can only tip the basketball. So I believe because he kind of does like a volleyball set. And to me, that's still tipping the basketball. It shouldn't matter whether you tip it with one hand or two hands. But I believe since he used two, they believed it was a catch and a shot, not a tip. And because of that, they called it a shot clock violation. So that is as much as I can kind of surmise from the way they described it, the way Mike Budenholzer talked about it. That is the way I believe that they called it.
Yeah, I mean, the rule has always been the clock doesn't start ticking until the ball is touched outside the jump ball circle. So I didn't understand why there was so, you know, people were confused about this last night. I think the problem was where the official said, you know, is it a catch or is it not a catch? I mean, it sounds like the NFL.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
I mean, it sounds like it. Did he catch and shoot? Okay. Or did he tip it? That to me is the big issue. All right. I mean, but see, I guess you can't use two hands isn't considered a tip anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that could just be their interpretation. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you really broke down the video, I would be shocked if Brook Lopez had his hands on the ball for more than 0.2 seconds.
Yeah,
I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
But what if that's like a hard and fast rule that they go by? I think they should probably inform everyone that a two hand touch is going to be called a catch and a shot and not a tip. Like that should be something the entire league should know, because then, okay, if you're going to try a tip, only use one hand. But I thought it certainly looked like a tip, and Lopez could have got that off. But to me, that's where the confusion started, is that, you know, I think everyone thought he got it off quick enough that it should have just been a tip, and instead they called it a catch and a shot.
Yeah, which was, I was confused in that, because I'm at the game, too, with you, and I'm like, they thought he caught the ball and shot it. That was clearly, I mean, I thought it was a group. I was pissed that Brogdon missed the follow-up. I was like, was there a foul? What was going on? So anyway, they held off. But, I mean, they. How do you think the Bucks defended that final play when, you know, Kyrie gets the off-balance fango-dango shot off that didn't fall, thank God. But did you see a foul underneath at all? I didn't really see anything. I mean, there was argument for a foul on the Bucks with more. I think it was who was running the baseline at that time?
It was Morris.
It was Morris. Yeah.
So to me, I guess one, if you're expecting an off-ball call in the final four mm-hmm. seconds of a basketball game, I mean, I'm not really sure what to tell you. I would think that you haven't watched much basketball in your life because everyone knows that you get to be more physical in those moments. And you know, I think the complaint was that Middleton held Morris as he tried to make a back cut as Middleton got screened by Irving, and it's just like, okay, well, did anyone happen to watch Irving's feet while he set that screen? Because they appeared to be moving. So if you're worried about Middleton holding Morris, you should also probably be worried about Irving moving his feet. And to me, I didn't see much there. Obviously, there was contact, but that's, to me, more or less been accepted off ball in those situations for the entirety of my life. So I didn't think there was much there. I think Kyrie Irving, I believe, told the Boston media that he thought he got fouled after, or he got fouled on the shot. And I mean, I didn't think there was a whole lot of contact there. I thought he pretty cleanly caught the basketball. Bledsoe put a hand on his hip. He was able to bounce off of that. Giannis tried to help from the from his left side, and I thought he stepped through that pretty cleanly. And then he just put up an off-balance floater. And to me, I didn't see anything that was particularly egregious. I think there's probably contact throughout, but I don't think that's any different than really any endgame situation. So I didn't see a heck of a lot there. And, you know, that was, again, maybe a shot that Irving shouldn't have taken. Giannis had helped so much that he totally left Al Horford on the left wing. He had time to pass it out to Horford for a three there. Horford could have hit that. Maybe that would have been a better look. But, no, I didn't see anything that I thought appeared to be a foul late in that game.
Eric Name joining us, Eric_Name, N-E-H-M on Twitter with The Athletic, theathletic.com, of course, subscribe. Namesy, Coach Names, the game last night, I've been saying throughout the season that Toronto's the team that's going to scare me the most. It's Boston. And Al Horford scares the hell out of me playing him. And then Kyrie, obviously, under 2 minutes, anything he does outside of that shot last night worries me. What do you imagine a seven-game series between these two teams look like? There's already that, you know, series last year, and they, not that they're going to come to blows, but I think tempers are very short between these two teams right now.
Marcus Morris is a disturber. Typically, I would put a word before disturber there, but I'm on the radio, so I can't say that.
You can swear on The Athletic, though, one of the reasons to subscribe.
You can?
Oh, they're dropping it. Namesy's dropping F-bombs left and right.
Really?
Oh, so, sure.
Oh, wow. Like in his game stories?
Well, if someone says the F-word, he's going to quote him.
Wow, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, if you've ever wanted to see Giannis drop F-bombs, The Athletic is the place to go because he does it just about any time I can get him going. So, but no, Morris kind of gets things going with them, and then they know each other well. Their wings are athletic and strong, like Brown and Tatum. They kind of use their bodies, Semi Ojeleye, same way. I don't know if there'd be a fight, but those two teams don't like each other, and they know each other pretty well at this point. And, you know, I'm trying to think if I still think that Raptors team has it together more than anyone else in the East, but, you know, you're always thinking about Ken. Whoever put it together, whether that's the Celtics or the Sixers, you know, can they put it together and figure it out? And I think it would be really interesting to watch these two teams go head to head for seven games because I thought last year the Bucks should have beat the Celtics, but just weren't particularly well coached, and Eric Bledsoe just didn't show up against Terry Rozier. So I don't know. It would be a really interesting series. I think if you're curious how it might look, I mean, Horford and Irving took 48 shots last night. They only hit 17 of them. And, you know, I don't think that's going to kind of be the way it goes most nights, but I do think that is how many shots they're going to take. And if you are someone who's particularly worried, concerned about Al Horford and Kyrie Irving hurting you, well, I think the Bucks are going to give those two, not give, but their defense gives up a lot of those shots that they have. And I thought last night they did a really nice job on Horford. They ran him off the line most of the time. They made him work for everything. Same thing with Irving. They got over a bunch of screens. And just I thought George Hill off the bench was huge on him. He's so long and kind of lanky that there's not really any respite for him, that he's going to go straight from Eric Bledsoe and his, you know, physicality and his long arms to George Hill doing the exact same thing. So for 48 minutes, Kyrie Irving's really going to have to work. And, you know, I just thought you look at I mean, that was kind of Celtics, like, I don't want to say playoff rotations, but Kyrie Irving played 41 minutes last night. And the Bucks bumped Giannis up a little bit to 37, but, you know, there's still more room for the Bucks to bump up some of those playoff minutes. And, you know, I thought the Celtics really went for it last night and just couldn't cut it.
What were your first impressions of Mirotić's debut at the Bucks?
His trigger is quick. He is ready to go the moment he steps on the floor, the moment he crosses half court. That it could go up at any moment. And, you know, I thought it was interesting to watch his first stint on the floor where, you know, I think everyone was just waiting for him to hit that first three and go get it. He gets his first bucket on somehow a basketball that gets on the ground, and he picks it up and lays it up and in. And it was just like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird. I wasn't expecting that from Mirotić. And then all of a sudden that second half, it is just him bombing away from three. And it did just look like he got a little bit more comfortable. He understood maybe even if it's only just slightly, you know, where his spots might be, how he's going to play with his teammates. And, you know, the thing that stood out to me was that, I guess two things. One, teams really pay attention to Mirotić. In the first half, despite not getting the three, I thought there was probably three or four plays where the Celtics just made sure that they were on him. And because of that, gave up an open shot to someone else. And, you know, when you're talking about spacing and trying to give Giannis all that space, gravity like that is going to be huge. And then, you know, I think the second thing is Giannis is going to know where he is at all times. And Giannis is going to do what he can to get him an open shot because, I mean, Giannis doesn't normally find a ton of corner threes. A lot of the times he'll have more above-the-break looks for bigs, and he found Mirotić for a couple looks in the corner. So it was kind of surprising to see a big in that area, in that spot, but he really did a nice job finding him, and I think he'll obviously fit right in and make quite an impact because he's more than willing to let it fly.
We were asking you a while ago whose minutes would be sacrificed, and it looks like the answer, at least for now, is my boy DJ Wilson.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think if you've watched enough Mike Budenholzer basketball over the years, you do know that he tends to lean on veterans, and he does tend to lean on the guys that he can trust. And at the start of this year, I think it was a little bit surprising to see him have Dante DiVincenzo out there as much, and obviously he had Sterling Brown get a pretty good run there for a while, and you've seen some younger guys kind of puncture things, and obviously DJ had a nice run there of, you know, a couple 20-minute games and things like that. But when you add a guy like Mirotić, I think that just means that obviously he's going to lean on his veterans. He very clearly loves Ersan. He played Ersan all the way through his month-long slump, and I think he's going to do that as we see in the playoffs. And I would guess that DJ will be a break in case of switching emergency kind of guy, that if you do really need to find a way to have a big move their feet, switch things up on defense, that'll be DJ's role. But I'm not sure he's going to get a whole lot more than that.
All right, with that roster, just tightening it up, you know, rotations as we go down to the home stretch here, do you see the Bucks maybe even adding anybody else as a, one of those street free agents, there is any room? What do you, how do you see that?
I mean, I think there's maybe the nightmare scenario that could still occur is a Brook Lopez injury or a Brook Lopez foul trouble once you get to the playoffs. So I think the thing that you're kind of looking at is a big and a truly like big body, not just a sort of big or a 4/5 kind of guy. You'd be wanting like a legitimate large body that you could put in the middle and have him do some of the same things Brook Lopez does. You could have him go up against Joel Embiid. You could have him go up against Marc Gasol. So I think that's one thing that you're always going to be looking for. But, you know, when I say that, I think you can pretty clearly see that there's not a whole lot of opportunity for that player. That isn't, if I'm telling you, we need you for, you know, if Brook Lopez gets hurt or if he gets in foul trouble, well, are you going to be all that excited to be like, yes, I'm coming to Milwaukee and I'm going to get a chance and an opportunity? No, of course not, because there's just not going to be playing time for you. And, you know, I think that's kind of the problem that goes with just about any spot on this Bucks roster, any buyout guy, any street free agent. All of those people want opportunity. The reason that they are a street free agent or they are a buyout guy is, you know, they are trying to position themselves for a contract for next year. And when you look at the Golden State Warriors, there's holes in their depth from, you know, 7 to 12. If you look at the Philadelphia 76ers, Boban Marjanovic is playing. that is significant. So they have that same kind of spot where, you know, 7 through 12 on that roster, there's holes. And you go to all these other teams that might be candidates for a buyout player, and they don't have the depth that the Bucks have. The Bucks are unique because they are built on that depth. They're built on being incredibly strong from 2 to 12. And those other teams aren't that. So I think that's where it gets difficult for the Bucks is I don't know that veterans are going to be clamoring to come to Milwaukee because they already have such good depth. And then I think you just have to try to figure out, like, okay, maybe the play is let's sign a guy for the rest of this season and then get a second year on his contract that's a non-guaranteed league minimum. And then, you know, maybe possibly that's a depth play that things don't shake out the way you want this summer, and then you have someone that you can kind of slot into one of those roles. So those are the things that I'm thinking about when you're thinking about street free agents and, you know, how this might kind of work out.
So Greg Monroe.
Have we tried that already?
I mean, he is a big body.
Used to not playing a lot.
I don't think you have to pay him $50 million this time around.
Friends with Chris.
He is friends with Chris. If you wanted to make that call, Chris might be able to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. How about that? All right. Eric Name, appreciate it. We will talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. See you, fellas.
Thanks, Name.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.